4 kids in my family. I have 2 sisters, both younger. The sister who's next in line from me, her name is Jane. Jane despises mourning. My whole family aren't mourning people, but Jane, more than everybody else, despises mourning. There was a Christmas when we were kids, and we had a rule in our house that we weren't allowed to go downstairs to our stockings without Mom and Dad. And we weren't allowed to wake Mom and Dad up until 8 o'clock in the morning, because we are not mourning people. And there was a particular Christmas that I was up. I always set my alarm to make sure I was up in time. And I went into my sister's room, as did my other sister and my brother, to wake her up with, "Jane, it's Christmas!" At which point, she slightly opened her eyes, in her worst, scariest voice said, "It is not Get Out." And then we spent the next 10 minutes trying to convince her this was a good day to wake up, because it was, in fact, Christmas, and eventually she did get up. When she was dating the guy who is now her husband, there was an occasion where he called at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And my mom answered the phone and said, "Actually, she's sleeping. Do you want me to get her?" "No!" Hung up the phone. My niece, Natalia, the very first thing that she learned to read was the 7 on the alarm clock in her mom's room. Because from the moment she was old enough to get out of bed and walk into Mom and Dad's room, she had to know that if that 7 wasn't on the clock, she was not allowed to disturb her mother. Here's an extraordinary thing, though. Yesterday, that same niece, who's now 8 years old, had an event at her school, and she was part of organizing a great big run that was happening at the school. So she had to be at the school at 8 o'clock in the morning. And her mom and dad were going with her because they were volunteering and they were going to be here for the whole days of events at the school. My sister, who growled at us at Christmas, who frightened her boyfriend half to death just at the prospect of accidentally waking her up, who taught her own daughter that you do not disturb mummy before the 7 is on the clock, said, "Sure, I'll get up bright and early and I'll drive in with you because, Natalia, this is important to you and I want to be there for you." That's what moms do, isn't it? I have to tell you, if you're a kid with a mom and you think about all the things your mom has done for you, I hate to break it to you, but most of them she didn't want to do. She didn't want to sit through hours and hours of junior high concert band concerts. She didn't want to go to all the things that you always want to go. Sometimes she was busy when you asked for a ride somewhere, and she put aside her stuff and she took you to those places. Because that's what moms do. That's what dads do. That's what love is, isn't it? It's about putting the other person ahead of yourself. Now, the unique thing about parents is that you almost never hear about it from your kids because they just assume it's their due. Of course you will go. Of course you'll drop everything and do this. That's why we set apart a day for mothers and a day for fathers, so that maybe kids can just have it tweaked for just a moment. Maybe I should thank my mom or thank my dad for all that they've done for me. But they do that because that's what love is. This is what Peter's encounter with Jesus was all about. They'd had this miraculous meal on the beach with Jesus after he had been raised from the dead, after he had helped them catch a miraculous amount of fish from an early morning fishing trip. And Jesus and Peter go off on their own a little bit. And Jesus says to Peter 3 times, he asks him, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?" In all likelihood, he was asking these because for 3 times, when Jesus was on trial, Peter was asked, "Aren't you one of his? Aren't you one of his? Aren't you one of his?" And each time, Peter said, "Nope, don't know the man. Nope, wasn't me. Must have been somebody else." And so this beautiful story of Jesus asking Peter 3 times, "Do you love me?" It's like each time he asked, "Do you love me?" he counteracts each time Peter had denied him. And in that beautiful act, Peter is redeemed. The old, the sin, the denial is gone, and it is replaced by the grace and the love that is Jesus. Do you love me? So what is this love? What does it mean? You know, some of us have had people in our lives, boyfriends, girlfriends, maybe spouses, who will in a really whiny voice, well, do you love me? Do you love me? Well, if you love me, you'll do this for me. Well, do you love me? And it grates on you, doesn't it? Especially if they ask like that. Some people ask those questions out of insecurity. They're not sure if they're loved. They're not sure how much you're willing to do for them. So they go on and they ask. And it's possible that we could read this story in that way. Jesus going, all right, Jesus, he told you. He loves you. Now get on with it. What are you so insecure about? Except that this is Jesus we're talking about. And he's not really known for his insecurity, especially after the resurrection, when he had fully taken on and claimed his place as the third person of the Trinity of God himself. Jesus isn't asking Peter, do you love me? Because Jesus needs to hear it. Because Jesus needs to somehow be assured that this disciple loves him and isn't going to deny him or betray him again. Jesus asks him because it's important for Peter to have the opportunity to say face to face to Jesus, I do love you. Yes, I do love you. And to say it over and over again so that it's like it takes up further and deeper residence in Peter each time he says those words. This isn't about romance either. Jesus isn't asking, do you love me, the way that you might ask somebody before you ask them to marry them or to date them or, well, do you love me? That's not what Jesus is asking. There's no romance in this whatsoever. The song we sang a little bit ago, Beautiful One, that's a song that we don't sing very often. I have a friend, and he was visiting our church one Sunday when we were first learning that song. This is quite a few years ago. And he said to me later that he hates that song, despises that song. He said to me, Elaine, as a man, I'm not going to sing Beautiful One to Jesus. And I looked at him and went, well, what do you mean by that? He goes, it's like it's a love song, by which he meant a romantic love song. And frankly, I can't sing about romantic love to Jesus, who was a man. Now, we'll pause for a moment and say that's a particularly North American male issue. That in other parts of the world, men are less concerned about displaying their affection for each other than they seem to be in North America. But regardless, I really think he was missing the point of the song. That the men who wrote that song, because it was men who wrote it, they weren't writing a song of romance. They weren't writing a love song in that kind of vein to Jesus. They were writing a song like Peter himself would have written. A song that came out of the depths of them as they understood what it was that Jesus did for them. Peter is standing there with Jesus, and Jesus says, do you love me? And Peter says, you know that I love you. I love you with every ounce of my being. This is something that takes the kind of romantic look and puts it off over here and says, this is so much bigger, so much more. My observation of marriages that last is that those marriages take romantic love and grow them to this kind of love. That it goes beyond those first early days of infatuation and of all the googly eyes and stars that you see when you look upon the other person to the place where you have lived through things together, where you have dealt with each other at your ugliest, most broken moments, and you still choose to be together and to love each other. That's what parents do, good parents do for their children. Because we all have been children, and if we're all honest, we know we haven't always been perfect children. That from the moment we come squawking and crying and screaming into the world, we aren't always nice and easy and sweet to our parents, but they love us anyways. And as we live together, as we work things through together, as we go through life together, as they sacrifice for us, and as we learn to sacrifice for our parents, the love turns beyond just kind of a surface level thing to something deeper and rooted, something that can take us through even harder times together. When people divorce because they say, oh, we just don't feel it anymore. They've missed the whole point. They've missed the whole point about what marriage and love is supposed to be. They've taken it and said, well, all it is supposed to be is this feeling like when you were dating and when you never, no longer feel like you did when you were dating, well, then it should be over. No, it should grow beyond that, says the single person. So I'm aware of that. When Jesus is asking Peter, do you love me? It's not for Jesus. It's not some kind of a weird romantic thing. It's something bigger and deeper and godlike in that. We love Jesus as our brother. Now, those of you who have brothers might go, well, I much prefer the romantic version because I don't much care for my brother. Right? All of our relationships are impacted by sin. All of our relationships are broken and aren't what they were designed to be. But imagine, if you can in your head, what the ideal relationship between brothers and sisters is supposed to be. Some of you have seen it, caught glimpses in your own families or in families of friends. You see how you get together, you get along. Again, when things are bad, when things are good, you're still there with each other. That siblings can fight, can tear each other apart. And the next moment you turn around and they're giggling and laughing and talking with each other. Because siblings are kind of stuck with each other. Siblings are there through thick and thin. There's jealousies and there's bickering and there's fights. And there's deep-rooted love that's not, I love you because I have to, or I love you because you did this for me. It's just part of that relationship. And when sometimes we have to get over ourselves and our own stuff enough to be able to really reach in and feel that and experience what that deep love is. But it's not all that different from the kind of love that spouses feel for each other, in that it comes from that same deep place where you're committed to each other and you go through things together. The difference being, of course, that you choose your spouse and you don't choose your siblings, do you? They're just there. Either they're there when you appear on the scene or before you have a chance to say a word about it. They're there because your parents decided it or nobody decided it. Who knows why they're there? But you know that you didn't have a say in this being your brother or this being your sister. The love isn't because I chose you. The love is somehow rooted in that connectedness, in that learning as we grow up in families, in that learning of what it means that we're connected, that we have each other's backs, that when one of us is in trouble, the other one is there to help, to see them through, to just be with them, even if there's nothing that we can do for them. I have two sisters and a brother, like I mentioned, and my relationship with all of them is different. But with all of them, if one of them's in trouble, of course I'm going to go. Even if I don't want to. Even if it gets in the way of my plans, of course I'm going to go, because it's my brother or it's my sisters. Now Jesus, as God's son, said that we are adopted into God's family. That because of Jesus, we also are God's children. That Jesus is our brother. Well, here's where it gets tricky. Because if Jesus is my brother, and Jesus is Carolyn's brother, then Carolyn is my sister. I wrote this down. The brother of my brother is my brother. The sister of my brother is my sister. Let that sit with you for a moment. It's like Jesus is in the middle, and we all, brothers and sisters to Jesus, are therefore, simply because of Jesus, brothers and sisters to each other. So then the question is, Elaine, you insert your name. You know how you would drop everything and go to your brother if he's in trouble, or to one of your sisters if they're in trouble? Would you do that for the brothers and sisters who are yours through Christ? Would you love them the way you love your brothers and sisters? In 1 John, a little bit before what was read for us earlier, in chapter 3, John writes, "Let us love, not in word or speech, but in truth and action." He's saying, love isn't about the words we spew out of our mouths. It's about what we do. It's about the actions. This is what Jesus said to Peter. He said, not just, do you love me? And then Peter responded and said, yes, I love you. Then what did Jesus say? Jesus said, then feed my sheep, by which he means feed your brothers and sisters. Feed my brothers and sisters. And feeding is just kind of meant to sum up all of the ways that we help and care for our brothers and sisters who are ours because they are Jesus's. Because this guy over here is Jesus' brother, that means he's my brother. Because this woman over here is Jesus' sister, that means she is my sister. And I am called to care for her the same way that I care for the brother and sisters that were born into the same Poprosky family. I wonder if we do that very well. The first disciples and the first earliest churches, they got this. They called each other brothers and sisters. Now, sadly, the only times I've heard Christians call each other brothers and sisters in our day and age, it's been used in a way that doesn't speak of love to me. It speaks of condescension and a fake kind of relationship of it. It doesn't matter the words and speech we use. It's the actions. Do we love each other as if we are brothers and sisters? Part of what that means is just like you can't ditch your sister or your brother as hard as you try. Yes, I know sometimes there is a lack of communication and you kind of push each other to the side, but it doesn't stop the fact that they are your sister or they are your brother. The same is true in God's family. I don't get to choose that some of you will be my brothers and sisters and some of you won't. It just is. You just simply are my brother. You just simply are my sister. My only choice is, will I treat you like my brother and sister? We are being asked the same question that Jesus asked Peter. Jesus is saying, do you love me? And we have to be careful that we don't too quickly answer, yes, I do. Because the qualifier is, then feed my sheep, or then love your brothers and sisters, because they're here in bodily form. And as you love them, that's how you are loving me. My brother's had some issues lately, some troubles, and my dad, it was a weird thing. My dad was thanking me for being there for my brother. And I didn't tell him that in my head, I'm not very good at helping and giving. I'm really not. This is confession time. In my head, I was like, man, I had other things to do this week. I don't have time to drive to Windsor. I don't have time to do this and just be with him. And like, I'm sure that you have much purer motivations and thoughts when you help people, but mine are often questionable. So when my dad was like, thank you so much for being there for your brother, I was like, oh, if only he knew. Like, I just feel so bad about what goes on inside of me, but I take hope that God's a God of grace and he's more interested in my actions than the inner dialogue that goes on. But it was as if I was loving my dad by loving my brother. And I think that's what it's like with Jesus, that as we love each other as brothers and sisters, that that's us loving Jesus. We can't answer, yes, I do love you, if we're not loving each other. It's a lie. We love each other, and that's how we love Christ. We love Christ by loving each other. So what does that mean? What is this love? Because it's not just a feeling. It's not saying, oh my goodness, I'm in trouble because I come in here and I don't get filled with warm fuzzies looking at all of you. That's not what it is. It's not about a feeling. It's about this sense of connectedness. It's about this sense that we are a family and that we have to figure out how to be a family because, like it or not, that's what we are. Us and those others who are Jesus' brothers and sisters who are outside of these walls. In 1 Corinthians, we get this traditional passage that's often read at weddings, but it speaks about what that means. What is this love that is in action and deed? You're familiar with these verses. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. That's what it means to love our brothers and sisters. That's what it means to love each other. Think about the people sitting beside you in these pews. Or think about the people sitting one or two pews ahead of you who you're not biologically related to. And think about interactions that you may have had with them. Is it patient? Are you kind? Do you manage to stay away from being envious or boastful or arrogant or rude with them? Do you insist on your own way? Are you irritable or resentful? Do you rejoice in wrongdoing or do you rejoice in the truth? Do we bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, and endure all things for the sake of our brother or our sister? Jesus' first question to Peter was, Peter, do you love me more than these? Off to the side were the other disciples sitting around their breakfast campfire. And Jesus and Peter have withdrawn, and Jesus says, do you love me more than you love these other guys? And Peter says, yes, you know that I do. And in a sense, then what Jesus says, well, in that case, take care of them. Be patient with them. Be kind with them. Bear with them. Endure with them. Don't be envious. Don't be arrogant. Don't be rude. Love them. And that's how you can love me. Because love is not in word or speech, but love is in truth and in action with our brothers and sisters.